All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Tuesday, December 13th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is
James Davis.
And we are going to be breaking down or taking a look back at week 14 that was in the NFL, taking a look ahead to week 15, have some pretty exciting news that I'll get to right after I tell you who we are. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, or DFSR.com for short. Here to help you get started or keep winning on FanDuel or DraftKings DFS, you can head over to the site, grab a free trial to our projection system, which is powered by Lineup Lab, that spits out optimal lineups for both FanDuel and DraftKings. It's free for 3 days and then $29.95 a month after that. And I'm going to get to the exciting news right away, and it has to do with our premium service that I just said about 2 seconds ago. So James already knows this, but and so do a lot of the DFSR listeners. But on Sunday night, I'm not going to bury the lead here. On Sunday night, we have a chat room up on the site, and I've just been grinding football all day, and I kind of just jumped out of chat. Usually I'm in there for most of the day talking football with people, watching the games. I jumped out for about an hour and a half during the Giants game just to kind of reset my brain, think about NBA. Jump back in the chat, and there's about 50, I would say, not 50, it's over-exaggeration, but there are 10 to 15, Doug, did you hear? Doug, did you hear? Doug, did you hear? I said, no. One of our users spiked the DraftKings Millionaire Maker on Sunday. He used Andrew Morris. I'm going to have him on the podcast later on this week on Thursday. I'll post an interview with him. But he's a premium user. He signed up at the beginning of September for our service. He used the some of his own picks and used Calculate to kind of fill out the rest of his lineup with our projections.
Describe, what do you mean when he used Calculate to fill out?
Okay, so we have a couple different if you don't use our site. We have ways that you can just kind of hit calculate and grab optimal lineups for all different slates. You can also do a feature where you lock in a couple players that you want and then hit calculate, and it fills in all of the players around the margins. So that's what he did. He chose a couple players. I believe Kirk Cousins and DeSean Jackson were two guys that he locked in, along with possibly Jeremy Hill. I'm not exactly sure because this is one thing I'm going to ask him when we talk on Thursday. But that's what it looks like the differences were, because there was a lot of other overlap between the optimal lineups and what he did. But he locked in those two guys, hit calculate, put in his entry, and he is $1 million richer. So
it's nice when it works out that way.
It is, so we're really excited. That's kind of it's the siren song for most of DFS. Is the reason a lot of people, I think, you know, specifically at the beginning, jump into DFS. Not us anymore, I don't think. But the reason you get it at the beginning is because you saw the commercials about some of the top prizes you can win in these contests. And then you keep playing because it's fun, and you, you know, it's fun and you just like sports. And DFS is, you know, the natural way to sort of enjoy sports on a Sunday. But man, we are very, 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 very excited about this. This is what you, as a provider, as a person, or a site that puts out projections, having one of your users win the top prize in one of these things. I don't think I was as excited as Andrew, but I would say I was 75% as excited. What were your feelings
when I
called you?
The same way. Like, I think it's always crazy. You know, I remember when I was a content provider for poker back in the day, and guys would win, and it didn't feel quite the same way because, you know, in poker you teach people concepts and they do well, but they're really the one, you know, just sitting at the table playing. Like when you know you had a really direct hand in helping someone do really well, it just feels good. So shout out to Andrew, great job, man, and now we'll work to try to do it for this week.
Yeah, so like I said, I'm going to have him on the podcast on Thursday, and we'll talk about, you know, some of the emotions that he went through and what that kind of money does for a guy, and I'm really excited to get to talk to him. We traded some emails back and forth, so that was the big news for us coming out of Sunday, I think. I mean, overall, look, it speaks to the projections as well that someone was able to hit the tippy top of the mountain on these. We had another great day in the NFL. I think swept every single slate. There might have been one, like, 4:30 slate that didn't get there on FanDuel. Otherwise, I believe, I had to look back, but definitely the main slates all cashed, surviving Jameis Winston unbelievably. We've had a little bit of trouble, I think, just with some of these just run bad, worst game of your season quarterbacks that we rostered, I think, like 3 weeks in a row. But that being said, as a whole, the projection system just is firing. And this is what happens when you get more and more information and you're able to ingest more and more information over the course of the season. And things can just start to even out a little bit in terms of how your model performs. And we're really just excited about it. So if I sound like I'm gushing, buddy, I'm gushing.
Yeah, buddy, you can gush. I think you've earned it.
All right, let's take a look at some of the stuff that came out of week 14. It was an interesting week on a whole. When you take a look back at some of the weekly leaders, you know, the top performers of the week, the list is weird. There's no other way around it, right? So we could talk a little bit about that. We'll talk, you know, some more trends that we saw, things that we can sort of digest going into week 14. Give me some of your thoughts real quick. Outside of the millionaire, which really did, you know, monopolize a lot of our late Sunday thoughts, I think, on football. Give me something that you'd kind of noticed from this week in terms of the games or some of the performances or just something that jumped out to you.
Yeah, there were a couple of things. I mean, so a couple, I guess, big notes I wanted to take away from it. One was, so we talked about Aaron Rodgers last week, and, you know, we put out that he looked like a good play on 8,000 in FanDuel, and, you know, thought maybe the sites were overcorrecting based on, you know, kind of the public perception of Seattle rather than the actual way they had performed. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, you know, we didn't expect Green Bay to go out there and beat them by 28 points. But I think it just speaks to, sometimes there's a public perception of something, and sometimes you just have to trust the numbers instead. And I think Rodgers was just a great example of that. That was one of the things that startled me the most. I was actually in Milwaukee this week, got to hear a bunch of Packers fans going bananas over that game, and I thought that was pretty interesting. And then the other thing, this is on the flip side, and I guess so here's the theme. Price matters, right?
Right.
So Rodgers going from being a $9,300 quarterback to an $8,000 quarterback when the matchup wasn't actually as bad as many people perceived, that seemed to make a difference to me. The other, in the same vein, David Johnson goes up to $9,700. Now, we played him, and I still maintain that was correct. But, you know, when you're going to play $9,700 for a guy at running back or really at any position, you really need to get locked in home run safety. And I think, you know, with him, a lot of people maybe perceived it to be just a little bit safer than it actually wound up being.
Well, and the thing with that game was, so I'm with you on both. I'm generally with you on both ideas here. The Rodgers game, we talked a lot about him going in, he and Jordy Nelson, actually, just how we thought that you still were getting value on it. And basically on that public perception piece, you were able to buy low at a time when maybe you were going to get value. Now, this is the old, you know, when the rubber meets the road, are we willing to actually pull the trigger for cash games? And we kind of weren't. And as part of that, actually, was influenced by the weather. And this is actually the theme for both these things. The weather in Green Bay was snowy and freezing cold. And that, to me, was actually, that was what actually ultimately drove me to drop his projection just a little bit, because it was close to, it was well below freezing temperatures. There was snow falling. And that's just really not the place you want to roster a quarterback, especially one where you're sort of on the fence with the matchup. Again, like we thought, it wasn't so much we were on the fence with the matchup, we were on the fence with the price. And so,
yeah. And it's all those little factors, you know, that you combine together. And I think that, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, the weather coming in and changing things was a very material concern. But I think that too often casual DFS players, especially ones that don't use any sort of lineup optimizer, they do a lot of by hand projections, for instance, they'll look at things like a Seattle matchup and apply sort of an unfair downward multiplier. Actually, in the same vein, I thought the Patriots-Ravens game played out very similarly. I mean, we talked last week specifically on this podcast and said, you know, don't shy away from the Patriots passing game in this thing. Now, of course, you know, we thought Edelman would get the things, not Chris Hogan.
Right.
Thanks a lot, Chris Hogan. but still, you know, it still holds true. You know, Brady, 400 yards, 3 touchdowns. He did have the pick, but, you know, the Patriots are smart enough to go in knowing that Baltimore can defend the run better than anyone. And so they go in there and yeah, Blunt still gets some carries, but it was the passing game that ruled the day. And so I think that people just need to be more judicious about how they try to interpret both price and matchup.
Yeah, for sure. And just going back to the Rodgers thing real quick, was that, you know, one thing we struggle with sometimes on Sunday mornings is how to evaluate weather and how weather is going to play a factor in certain performances. This was what we kind of ran into with Andy Dalton as well, where it was supposed to be cold, it was supposed to be snowy in Cleveland, we love the matchup, but it's a very difficult to roster quarterbacks in that situation. Now, the David Johnson thing was a different situation. The weather there looked like passing showers and a little bit windy. What it ended up being was a total monsoon. And so what happened there with David Johnson was, this is why I'm actually not too worried about Johnson overall based on this performance, is because they just simply couldn't, Carson Palmer was so terrible. Like, you just couldn't even throw the ball. Like, so if you look back at replays of the game, I mean, I was watching the game, but if you watch it, you just the ball was so soaking wet that, like, Tannehill threw one pass that, like, just went behind him. Like, he just threw the ball, and, like, the ball ended up behind where he had been standing. Palmer couldn't hold the ball. It really killed a lot of drives. The rain was much heavier than I think most people. I read 3 different weather reports from 3 different outfits because I try to use actual expert weather people as the source of information, not just like me going to weather.com, because I don't think that's a good use of my time to try to evaluate that. So three different sources didn't really have it like that. The weather really ended up becoming a factor with Johnson. I haven't looked at prices for this week yet, but I would not change our projections on him based on this last game, simply because I think there was outstanding circumstances that influenced the overall production, and that was that it was just literally a torrential downpour. And he actually almost even got lucky by getting an overtime, but the Cardinals just couldn't stop the Dolphins on the last drive to just sneak him into overtime. So all that being said, these are the difficult things that muddy the waters on Sunday, especially on Sunday morning, and like those trying to evaluate just exactly what weather is going to do to a player can be difficult. And it can be that's a real hand-wringing territory that I get into is, it's going to snow. Does that mean Dalton has five less passing attempts? You know, like, does it matter at all? Like, should it not? Like, where do you think we fall into situations like this? Like, where, walk us through the process that we go through trying to, because ultimately what we're trying to do is determine opportunity based on weather, right? Like, we're not like saying, sure, like, there's not like just like a weather multiplier that says, oh, it's snowing 10% less in terms of just overall production. What we try to do there is we try to, you know, make sure our inputs on like projected pass attempts and things like that are correct. Like, what do you see at, like, what do you, you know, describe some of that process for everybody?
Yeah, I think that first and foremost, people should understand that by and large, the pricing on the sites is efficient enough to where new information that comes to light winds up being a really big needle mover in many cases, right? So, you know, you take a guy like Aaron Rodgers last week. So, you know, they move the price down a little bit and our system notices a little bit of an inefficiency and says, okay, well, they've overcorrected just by a hair, making Rodgers a much better play than he normally would be, thanks to the $8,000 price, right? So when new information comes to light, like, oh, well, now it's going to be against Seattle and it's going to be bad weather, the margins are so thin and there's so many options. So there's whatever 32 quarterbacks you could conceivably play in a given week that frequently those guys no longer become the absolute top option. And in many cases, they're still a reasonable option. Like, I think that it worked out that way with Dalton. But, you know, it's just one of those things, you know, like, we're going to move the needle around just slightly based on these subjective kind of inputs. And that's kind of how it comes together.
Another big theme from this past week was, I thought, just the amount of sort of out of nowhere guys that ended up having huge games. And so, you know, you look at quarterback, you look at just, I'm just running down the top performers, let's say, of the top fantasy performers of the week. And you get Brady. Okay, fine. He was on Monday night slate anyway, so that wasn't really a main slate consideration. I know people play all slates, but just that he just didn't end up becoming as much part of the conversation. The other quarterbacks, you know, you get Trevor Siemian throws for 330 yards. You get Flacco, who throws for 300 last night. He was trying to play catch up. Wentz throws for 300 and a touchdown, and then Sam Bradford. I mean, these were just not
names.
And
that's it for 300-yard passers this week on a full slate, four passers.
Right, and that's like a crazy low number. And I'm just not sure, you know, when you see guys like this, that these sort of like I would call them out of nowhere guys, only because these were not, none of these guys were on our radar going into the week, right? Like, the big starts were guys like Cousins. I'm trying to think who else were some of the bigger starts, but like Andrew Luck was a pretty big start. Do we shift our thought process at all when you sort of see these out of nowhere names, or is just kind of, this was just the kind of week that it was, and performances will regress to their means, and we can still just kind of take a look at guys who have been good for most of the season and say those are going to be the guys we want to kind of roster going forward?
Well, no, I think it picks up on a theme that we've talked about in the recent few weeks of the NFL season, which is that passing is not as safe as it used to be. And I know there were some out-of-nowhere running backs this week too, but you know, we talked about last week going in that it looked like a week where paying up at running back was going to be the thing you wanted to do because so many of the passing options seemed pretty speculative. And we actually specifically called out guys like T.Y. Hilton and Emmanuel Sanders who wound up having big weeks. And I think that speaks to why it's not the time of the year where you want to pay up for big receivers. And so I take the passing, just the lower passing totals overall and the specific names that cropped up on top of the passing charts, I think that's pretty indicative that trend continues. And not to say that there won't be times when you do want to pay up, but, you know, I would start from the assumption that it's probably not right to invest a ton in the passing game at this point in time.
Yeah, no, and looking ahead to week 15, I think we're going to be in the same situation here where we're going to have a class of running back, and it's going to be led by Bell and Johnson again. Both are in again. Well, Bell's matchup's not as good, but Johnson, you know, is going to face New Orleans. And then you get guys like maybe Shady McCoy against Cleveland, and, you know, Zeke Elliott versus Tampa Bay. And that's kind of the list, right? Like, these are just the guys that just get all their team's carries. There's so much safety in that. It's been proven week after week after week that this is the team's plan. And I just don't see it changing again. I mean, there's a slight situation, I guess, with Melvin Gordon, the fact that he's out now. And if San Diego is willing to rely on Farrell, though I'm not positive they're going to. And I think we're going to just be once again, like in the past, a guy like Gordon goes down and you're like, nice. Well, not nice for him. It's horrible for him, obviously.
Sorry. I'm not like that.
No, sorry. That's not a bad. I don't mean that. I mean, I from a fantasy perspective, you think, okay, I'm going to be able to grab some really solid running back one value on cheap because prices had already been released and he's out for the season. I'm not sure he's out for the season or not. I think he is. And now you're going to get, like, you know, Farrow. But then the teams just don't. I mean, Gordon already was kind of. Was supposed to be a running back by committee before Woodhead got hurt, and then they just made him the only guy, and they made him the only guy for a reason, because their backup guys just can't do anything. And so you would think, you're like, oh, I'll get Farrow for $4,500 on FanDuel. He's going to get like 15 carries, a couple receptions, and we're good. It's just, you just can't bank on that happening. Now, that being said, he might be cheap enough overall that you can consider it, but we're just in a new situation with DFS, I think, in general. And it's just that there's a very top-of-the-mountain guy that's great, and then the rest of the guys sort of just fall into like this middle ground.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I guess I'm a little bit more, I would be a little bit more enthusiastic on who will get the care, like that somebody will get the carries in San Diego, just because they're so banged up and somebody's got to get out there and do something. And so the fact that Farrell was a little weak on yards per carry basis last week against a good running defense in Carolina, and the fact that they were trailing the whole game, leads me to believe that there's probably bigger things to come for him. But yeah, I think overall, I hear what you're saying. I guess if we heard that Melvin Gordon was out for good, I would be hard-pressed not to at least consider him very, very fully this week.
You know, I actually misstated here on Gordon. I guess I thought the injury was worse than it was. I guess he's week to week. I thought, yeah. Well, I was watching the game, and he got hurt, and he got landed on a pile, and I just kind of maybe just presumed that he was kind of done. But I guess I'm reading the note now that it's not as bad as he thought. I still don't think he's going to play this week, but just something to definitely keep an eye on. But that being said, you know, these running backs going into week 15 again are, like I said, just there's a class at the top, and then you take a pretty big dip down into the unsafe range. And whereas wide receiver, you just simply on a week-to-week basis, like last week we saw Mike Evans go into what we thought was just a premium matchup against the Saints. And he kind of just does nothing, right? Like, he gets like six or seven targets. Winston in general just looked bad. The Saints played a little slower, and so did Tampa Bay. So the game kind of slowed down to the point where really nothing could get done. You know, and we look at the wide receiver list of top games. You know, like we said, we have Chris Hogan. T.Y. Hilton was a guy we liked. He had a nice game, 9 catches for 115. Demaryius Thomas, he ended up being pretty good. He and Emmanuel Sanders were sort of both in that, like, got all the targets for the Broncos. But then you get like guys like Marquise Lee and then you get a tight end, Zach Ertz, who actually, it's funny, I'm not even complaining about Ertz because we played him on DraftKings and kind of had him just about in every lineup over there. But, you know, this is not, when you get to the end of the week and you're like, this is our top receiver list, this is again where you're like, well, these names are just kind of come out of nowhere guys. And that does seem like it happens a little bit more at receiver than it does at running back.
Well, and I don't think that's actually the case normally, but it's certainly been the case this season for sure. Because take a look at a guy like Chris Hogan, right? So Hogan comes out 129 receiving yards and a touchdown, and he tops this leaderboard because he had the most yards on the week. But, you know, if you look closely at that game, he still only had the 7 targets, and it just happened to be the 79-yard reception that put that total over the top. A guy that I think, I mean, maybe people sleep on, maybe they won't just because DFS community is so much smarter than it used to be, but Julian Edelman, you know, he had 15 targets last week and didn't turn it into a huge fantasy performance, and it was a little bit less conspicuous since it was on Monday night, so he wasn't like an every lineup guy for a lot of people, like maybe he would have been, but, you know, Baltimore's still a pretty tough matchup, and if he's really going to get 15 targets a week, he's just going to be super, super undervalued going forward, and it'll probably take till the end of the season for the sites to catch up on a proper price there.
Well, that was and that's the key too with the Patriots, and they show once again that not that they're matchup proof, but they can play an elite defense, and sometimes it kind of just doesn't matter. I mean, Baltimore is a top 5 defense this year, and like I think they're like top 1 against the run or something like that, and Patriots just had no problem scoring, and if that's going to be the case, then you just almost not you throw out the opponent out the window with them. But you can kind of start trying to think about throwing the opponent out the window because they they just kind of can get it done. It just doesn't really matter who they play week to week basis. You make a great point about Edelman where, you know, people will get caught up in the big sort of flashy, huge Hogan game. But yeah, there's just reason to believe that that is the outlier. That's the exception, probably not the norm for what the Patriots are going to do on a week to week basis.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, as you look up and down this top receiver list, you know, a little bit more deeply, the other guy that we talked about a little bit was Taylor Gabriel. And, you know, he was in every lineup guy for us on both sides, I think, right?
Yes.
And I think he's the legit real deal sort of thing, too. Like, the Falcons are just going to pass. And if Jones and Sanu, even if they come back and they're a little bit banged up, Gabriel might see a more prominent role going forward. And yeah, if you're just going to keep getting value on these cheap receiver guys, if cheap receiver is the new cheap running back, then I think that's a good inefficiency to pick up on now, especially while we have some elite running backs to choose from on the top end.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think we do see we see some value creeping up in some of these wide receivers in new situations where, you know, the teams, you know, and again, you don't need to have like a running back 18 carry, 3 target kind of upside at some of these wide receiver prices to sort of just take a chance on guys. Gabriel got 6 targets. He got 6 targets in a game where the Falcons really didn't even need to pass that much because they were scoring defensive touchdowns and they were just crushing the Rams anyway. So the 6 targets on Gabriel in that kind of situation to me feels like probably his floor in a game that's kind of going correctly.
I agree completely. I think a 10 targets would be about the right number if, you know, if it were a normal game script there.
Right, and so you get a guy like him, and then sometimes you can evaluate guys in somewhat new situations also. Like Robbie Anderson's in a new situation in that they have a new quarterback, and all of a sudden Robbie Anderson is just like the guy Bryce Petty wants to throw to all the time. And that had sort of creeped up in the game against the Colts, where he had something like 11 targets, and then he just repeated it this week again. And it's just obvious that Petty wants to throw to him over Marshall and Anunua. So it doesn't always need to be an injury that opens up the opportunity for a wide receiver. It can just be like in this case, I mean, it doesn't happen every week with a new quarterback, but yeah, Petty's just going to be the quarterback. He seems comfortable throwing to a guy like Anderson. So trying to figure out these, you know, not all targets are created equal. And, you know, when we go into a week, we try to evaluate target share for a player. And sometimes we'll take season averages because that's just the best marker. Like if you look at a guy like, let's say Odell Beckham Jr., nothing about his situation or the Giants situation has changed at all, right? Like they're just pretty much the same team at the beginning of the year that they were that they are now. And so kind of looking at his average targets for the course of the year is just a fine way to go. And you can maybe, you can kind of take, if there's been something that's maybe stands out to you over the last couple weeks that's different, then maybe you can tick it up or down. But for the most part, you don't really need to get too cute with a guy like him or a guy like Mike Evans in general, right? But some of these other situations, like a Gabriel, like a Robbie Anderson, you mentioned Chris Hogan, like where we maybe don't move it, even though he had a huge game. These are the things that we really want to work on evaluating correctly. And that's where the rubber really meets the road for some of these receivers, is trying to figure out if the targets are there or if the production's there, why is it happening? And do we need to make fundamental changes on a player just based on like sort of recent performance for good or for bad?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And I think just trying to figure out what matters, you know, sometimes fantasy points don't matter sometimes.
Right.
And sometimes they do, you know, but it all comes down to the underlying statistics and the performance and all that sort of thing. So, yeah, we got a lot of work ahead of us going into this next week, and I'm sure we'll pin it down and figure it out for you.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting week coming up here. A lot of just good teams or good players facing bad defenses again. We mentioned Farrow again. I probably was a little bit in looking at, as we paused the podcast real quick and looked at it, and you probably were like, "Yeah, Farrow's probably in every lineup guy for us." And sure. So I'm going to
Bilal Powell too. Actually, if Forte goes down, we might actually wind up with some pretty good options this week.
Yeah, so maybe I take back a little bit what I said about the being no running back situation. So that's something we'll evaluate going forward. Once again, congratulations to Andrew Morris for taking down that DraftKings millionaire. We'll talk to him on Thursday for the Thursday Value Plays podcast. Jump on, and before we break down too much of the plays, we'll get his insight into what kind of his emotions were and everything that went down for him on Sunday. Could be having $1 million more in the bank than he had at the beginning of Sunday, which is always a nice way to sort of wake up on Monday. Once again, we're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short, and you can grab a free 3-day trial of the projection system that helped Andrew take down the millionaire maker on DraftKings, and that's free for 3 days, and then just $29.95 a month after that. Do not think you'll be disappointed with it. If you want just from some user proof, go over to the site, jump into the chat room, and just ask our many, many users who are talking sports all day long, hey, should I get the projection system? And that's really the best sales pitch that we can have. So we will be back again on Thursday talking about our value plays, and then again on Friday breaking down every single game on the NFL slate. Until then, buddy, let's get to work on the NFL projections.
Let's do it.